Hello and welcome to Playwright, a podcast about creating and sharing new ways to play. My name is Ryan Heyman. You can call me H.
And I'm Ryan Quintel. You can call me Q.
It's been a very eventful few days here on the video game scene. Just over the weekend, as of the time of recording, actually, this is another kind of tight turnaround podcast. This is all still pretty recent, still pretty up to date. But I have gotten a weekend full of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater. I am very happy. They just announced a sequel to Hyrule Warriors. So my niche gameplay needs have been fulfilled for the year.
You know,
2020 ended up pretty okay after all.
Your hierarchy of needs is the base of a little taste of Zelda for the year is there. We got some. How good is Tony Hawk 1 and 2? I saw your tweet about the two things you would change, really. And I'm right there with you. I get that. I get that holding down a bug or for some reason I'm not going fast like I need to go in Tony Hawk. Yeah. What was the other one that you mentioned?
Is it just like on the PC version, the music isn't loud enough in the mix?
Oh, it's the same on the console.
Okay. I was playing on Xbox as well. And I didn't have that same problem there, but it might just be speaker setup.
Yeah.
But I just wish there was a way to kind of boost it independently other than just turning everything else down and then cranking up. I wish certain games would just allow you to kind of push things to level 15 instead of just stopping at 10.
Yeah, right. Because I do find the mix of basically everything else pretty good, but the music is still a little bit fading in the background for me. And I feel like when I turned the sound effects, I ended up turning the sound effects down to 25% or 20%, whatever. And just turning my speakers way, way up because how could you not come to Tony Hawk, at least in part for the soundtrack, but it looks great. It plays great.
Great remaster. Yeah. Gosh, it's just a solid, on console, solid 60 across the board. On my computer is probably a solid, 90 to 110.
I thought you were about to tell me 500.
More frames than the human eye can perceive.
Yeah. Hey, why not?
But it's so much fun. I love, they give you the career progression is pretty bare bones. There's really other than unlocking levels, there's not really a lot to kind of incentivize you to keep pushing forward. And then when you beat each campaign, it hardly even drops in to tell you that you've done so. There's really very little fanfare around any of that, which is fine. It's a score chaser.
It's an exercise in subtlety. It's an I agree with you.
I love the what is that third mode? That's kind of the sessions skater, or I love the speedrun mode that they include in there. It's really you watch Tony Hawk speedruns on GDQ or whenever they come around, and you think oh man, that would be cool to really optimize a route and really learn my way through one of these levels, but I'm never going to end up doing it. But then once you're given the option, once you're given kind of a timer that counts up and says complete all of the goals of this level in as little time as possible, I don't know, it's really fun. You think yeah, I'm not going to be able to do this. And then you just kind of think, well, let's give it a try, see how many I can remember. And before you know it, you've got a pretty decent score.
I haven't checked out that mode yet. I've just been, I beat Tony Hawk 1, and now I'm, I think, four levels deep, or halfway through, if you will, 2. If you would have told me before they announced this thing that, Ryan, you will take joy out of collecting skate in fall of 2020, I probably would have cast my doubts at different points, but I'm here. I am, and I really like it.
It's it's kind of a weird mixture of the entire series. They have some kind of combo boosting mechanics that were introduced in 3 or 4, maybe, where you can add modifiers onto manuals and grinds to basically get crazy high combos. Just by kind of madly tapping buttons while you're grinding or manualing. But it doesn't seem the goals have necessarily been adjusted upwards to compensate. So you're just kind of obliterating all those goals, and it's pretty fun. I enjoy it.
I'm now back to orchestra hits being a Pavlovian positivity response.
Yeah. That's great. That the gap sound effect, the special move sound effect, like it's just, it's perfect. It got me curious about the Tony Hawk's Pro Skater HD that came out in 2011, I think it was.
Yeah.
So I reinstalled that one on Steam and went back to it. And just like, I remember not liking it before, but I thought like, it's a Tony Hawk game. Like what's the worst? Like even a bad Tony Hawk game still has to be better
sure.
than most games. But like, yeah, going back to it, it just, it feels really bad.
It's also one of those things, and I know the listeners are like, get on with the pitches, but actually that's not true. You're all very generous listeners, and you're great about being patient with us. But I will say that I, as much as I have enjoyed the experiences over the past few years of Ollie Ollie, you know, even the skate series, there was always something in my mind that I was almost worried for the Tony Hawk franchise that an indie game developer, another game series would come along and kind of take its place because damn it, this is the Tony Hawk series. It was incredible. And it, it almost, this is capitalism poisoning my brain, but this franchise deserves its heyday back.
Mm.
And I think we're there. I would gladly hand Activision money for the Tony Hawk 3 and, you know, was 4 also 3 linear?
Plus 4, let's make it happen. 4 is more kind of like open world. You go to quest givers and they give you like a, although gosh, thinking back, 4 might've had like a separate mode in which each of the levels were treated more traditionally. I know that Underground had that where it would be kind of like 2-minute sessions, you know, skate letters, combo letters and certain number of goals. So it was kind of like pulling double duty on the levels.
I do remember enjoying them finally because it was a big change at the time saying we're breaking the 2-minute session and we're allowing you to fully stop your skateboard and kind of walk around. Not that the navigation was ever very good or as satisfying as being on your skateboard, but I weirdly, I don't know. What does it say about me that if they used this engine and redid some of those old games that I would probably be there to play them again.
I would, I would love 3 plus 4. Let's make that happen in the next couple of years. Mm-hmm. So ready to be back in the Tony Hawk swing of things.
Too bad we don't title episodes like that because the Tony Hawk swing of things would be a very, very good podcast title.
Let's get into some video game pitches. I'll be going first today.
Yes.
What I want to do, this is kind of inspired by Roombas, actually, how as they're vacuuming around the room, they're also kind of creating a mental map of the room so that they, you know, they might bump into walls and stuff the first time around as they start to kind of learn the layout and shape. But after a while, they kind of acclimatize and they just kind of know where to vacuum and where not to. They're not bumping into things anymore.
Mm.
So I'm kind of inspired by that. And also by this new kind of Mario Kart game that's coming out later this year, where it's like actual cameras mounted on the back of actual RC cars so that rich people can play Mario Kart too.
With huge houses and hardwood floors.
But what I want to do is a phone game where you scan your room using AR, and the phone kind of has a preview, like a picture taken from a 3D scene that is created out of entirely kind of original assets to replicate the layout of the actual room, but, you know, entirely fabricated assets. Mm. So, you know, if you have like a big empty room with a table in the middle of it, then it might be like a canyon scene with like a waterfall spilling over like a plateau or something. It would be different, but like it would look different, but everything would have the same layout. And basically you would have to go try to reproduce that angle in the real world to get points. And then obviously you would know kind of in a 3D space where you're shooting from, where the kind of virtual shot came from, and it would score you based on that. So I'm going to go ahead and start the clock.
So couple clarifying questions out the gate. This contains you first doing a mapping of your home, or something is automatically mapping your home, and then you're off to find the sort of geometric match of things.
I think just like AR games, you kind of have to give it like a, you have to kind of scan in, like,
yeah,
using
like
your
wiggle the
camera.
Phone around or whatever.
Yeah, so maybe it's a little bit more of an involved process depending on how much space you want to utilize. But basically, I just want enough to give the phone like an idea of like what the room or what your home looks like in 3D.
That's cool. I like the idea of being able to potentially maybe have a little character or little tools within the AR experience on the phone that you could use to unlock or rather kind of demystify individual elements in the world. So it's like, this is a, you know, like you said, a mountain with a waterfall, but maybe some way to unlock of like, oh, it's a table, right? And then by seeing, okay, now you've just got this big table, but it's in, I don't know why, but in my head, that first Mario Galaxy, not Galaxy Odyssey level,
yeah,
is in my head aesthetically. And so you see the table, it's in that world, and now you're like, oh, that's like the immediate orientation. So that almost makes it, you know, it's like a giving a hint or something.
So it's all kind of based on this kind of like 3D recreation. I guess what would be kind of like interesting angles to take this? You know, I don't know if like a photo scavenger hunt is the most interesting thing we can do with this. I like the idea of scanning your room and it reproducing it as kind of a series of 3D objects, but like, you know, let's not limit ourselves. If we have cooler ideas of gameplay interactions with it, then we can suggest.
I know with AR phones, they're increasingly getting to the point of sophistication where they can do something called object occlusion. And so for people that mm-hmm. don't know what this is, it's essentially the ability to, if your cat walks in front of a table, the phone can now decipher that is a cat. It is not part of the table. It is in front of the table. And these are two mm-hmm. separate spaces, which is, it maybe sounds easy because our brains do it automatically for us, or our two eyes and our stereoscopic vision do, but phones don't necessarily, you know, computers can't do it. So I like the idea of maybe being able to occlude objects in your home, you know, hide them in some way, almost like an AR hide and seek. Can your phone like find an object that you hide from it? That also sounds incredibly dystopian. I picture
like that. It could be kind of like a multiplayer type thing as well. People could kind of move around each other's homes and kind of place things virtually. And then the other person would have to go and kind of search them out.
I'm trying to think about what else, because that Mario Kart thing has you almost like looking at your Switch and not necessarily the objects around your home. So I wonder if there's like right. a little, almost like a drone angle or something on this that is really capturing the image, but the phone is doing all the processing of it. So you could fly one of these little, you know, those chintzy little $20, $30 quadcopters around, but your phone is able to turn it into a Star Fox-like level or something.
If the phone has like an idea of the 3D space of your room and it kind of like remodels everything with completely, you know, original fabricated assets, I guess, yeah, it probably has enough power to display something like that in real time and to recall, like map the space if you're flying an object through it. I guess I have a hard time kind of like understanding the AR well enough to know like what are the limits of processing and where we are with the technology right now.
Do you remember when the 3DS originally came out and it shipped with those little AR cards?
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
That was cool. And they did all the sort of like your, you know, coffee table would unfold and Mario would jump out or whatever. Or you could shoot little space invaders coming in type of stuff. And I wonder if there's the equivalent of the old Windows 95 arcade suite to be played in AR in your house, or like this AR game as it maps your house. It allows you to do things like leave objects in real time for players to discover that wouldn't be there. That feeling of like the second layer of reality on top of things. And then you could actually play like hide and seek with those real objects, and they could be occluded too, right? When you put them under the couch, which is a very difficult thing to do in AR. Like, it would be appropriately under the couch.
Okay.
Let's think about, I mean, I feel like with all these, with any new technology, the best thing to do is look at the oldest and most simplest games. What would, like, Centipede feel like in AR, the way that you're able to sort of, the Centipede would weave through parts of your house and you could actually destroy like the bottom of table legs and stuff in order to get access to be able to shoot it.
It would be kind of fun to do like a, like an at-home AR arcade collection full of kind of classic games.
Yeah, a Pac-Man experience where the maze, like the dots just get plotted all around and you have to like, you're walking between your living room and kitchen is like the, of course, this, yeah. This is of course, assuming people even have these separate rooms in their house, but a bedroom and a kitchen. And meanwhile, the dots are like all along your crown molding or something. I mean, it's interesting because we're getting a sequel to it, but I'm really, a game that I feel like would be really custom tailored to AR is, with the success of Pokemon Go, Pokemon Snap, for God's sake.
I think that's an easy one that people have been wanting for a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, and it really feels like all the tools are there in Pokemon Go already.
Right.
Like, it would be a pretty simple adaptation to make. Feels like Nintendo is starting to get a little burnt out on mobile games, which is fine with me, honestly. But yeah. Like, even if like Niantic just wanted to kind of do this on their own, kind of spin off the technology they've already built. But yeah, I mean, it's such like a, it feels like a more interesting angle, almost like a more natural use of your phone to like just get your phone out, take pictures of the Pokemon around mm-hmm. you, you know, instead of like swiping the screen to throw Pokeballs at them, you know, it invests you more in the space that you're in. It's something that you like literally can't do while you're driving. So they get to avoid that side of the, you know, liability of playing Pokemon Go. It just feels like a very natural fit.
And I haven't played Pokemon Go really since it originally came out, but I don't know if it currently does this, but a Pokemon Snap or something like that would lend itself so well to, or even, you know, even another AR experience, going outside and going to a tree and there are AR fruit to pick. And now I can collect that fruit and I can mm-hmm. use that in some other aspect of the game. So turning your entire world, your natural world, into places where you can collect these virtual things, maybe literally outside of a candy store, right? We know where a candy store would be on the map, or a restaurant, and you can collect little, you know, sushi pieces or something, and then use those later to, I don't know, attract a Diglett in this scenario. But, you know, maybe it's this whole other world. We've got many cute creature games too now. We've got Ooblets and we've got Bug Snacks coming. We've got all sorts of worlds we could play in.
So I guess we're kind of pivoting into kind of a photography Pokemon Snap type of game. Let's come up with one more interesting twist and then we can kind of end this one. So whether we're using kind of an existing property or something original, it would be kind of like a cool angle. You know, one thing in Pokemon is that there are certain Pokemon that come out when it's daytime or nighttime, or some that can only be found in snow regions or hot regions. And, you know, obviously we could do something like that in real time or, you know, by traveling around the world. But if all these collectible monsters that are in this game could all be found around the house and it was meant to be played, you know, indoors or whatever, maybe you could find ways of kind of simulating different environments by either kind of creating dioramas or by, you know, pointing your phone at something that is actively hot. I don't know if phones can detect heat, but if you could point it at like one of those stoves or something like that, and it could kind of detect the heat coming off of it, and you know, the fire types would be found around there. If you could point it at water, I don't know how advanced the phones are, but you know, it's, you could turn off the light in the room and all the kind of Zubats and stuff would come out.
That's really cool. I love the idea of playing with light and shadow in this thing.
Yeah, but anyways, I think that's enough time on that. Let's close it down. Let's give it a name.
I think the Pokemon thing is interesting, but we don't, it doesn't necessarily have to be there. Is there something that's like akin to, I feel like Nintendo does this more than others, which is like the name of your thing is also a little bit the name of the technology, whether it's Nintendo Land and Wii Sports Resort are kind of tied to the console names, but I feel like it should be in that vein of like, I don't know, augmented adventures or something.
Augmented, if there's like a word for creatures that begins with an R or something, we can plug that in there to get the acronym.
I need a thesaurus. You could do, okay, this might be cringy, varmint with AR in capital.
I think I was kind of sputtering out, so
you'll take what you can get.
Yeah, I think that'll do it for us.
Varmint, a Playwright original. Hey, I'm not proud of it.
All right, what are you bringing us today?
There was a wonderful game that I saw recently on itch.io, and the game is called Terra Nil. And at first glance, it's a very Ryan game. It's there's a wasteland, and you're dropping these little items in, and you're terraforming this space. But what I thought was interesting is rather than being kind of a chill simulator game, what they've done with it is they've made it a puzzle game where you have to sort of maximize your usage of the land and your revival of the land in order to gain sort of power or green power in order to buy the next building that will, you know, clean up another part of the land. So you get these very small square isometric maps and you kind of go around and you have to optimize what buildings you're going to build in what order, and if you run out of power, you kind of lose the puzzle. And obviously the maps get kind of bigger and bigger as you try and solve these puzzles. So anyway, it's a very cool game, and it started to put me in this mind of terraforming, and what if there was a game, imagine a little bit more 3D, but it was almost a terraforming city builder. I know some of these kind of exist, like Surviving Mars, but rather what the terraforming does in this game now is essentially allow you to unlock pieces of land that now behave in new ways. So you're modifying as you terraform, you're modifying climate systems, and you're introducing new types of terrain and stuff to a once barren planet. And the more you terraform and bring these things to life, you might even be introducing new types of creatures and threats to your sort of city sim management game.
All right, I'm going to start the clock there. So by these threats, are we talking like animal threats?
Yeah, I think like if you suddenly you have an ecosystem to deal with, and you fix this region once you terraformed it, maybe it became mountainous, and now you've got things like hawks and mountain lions to contend with, and I don't know, maybe it makes more sense as a survival game, like really change the perspective, go first person, do the satisfactory to the factorio, if you will.
I think what would be interesting is to take something kind of halfway between Grounded and Viva Pinata.
Ooh.
Where you are kind of managing like in a strategy type game, like a Frostpunk type of perspective, managing a colony of like very, very small people.
Okay.
And you have to kind of like forge the land around you and try to clear out space for your colony to live. But there are, you know, animals and wildlife and stuff that will come in. And so you have to hunt to survive, but maybe hunting certain animals will attract others towards your camp, and maybe, you know, clearing out enough space, even though it's good for, you know, putting up houses and gathering resources, will, you know, invite like a family of mice to come in, or, you know, whatever it is that, like, I like when, like in Viva Pinata, where actively going out and finding things, you're kind of like making your garden hospitable to the creatures. And
yeah.
So, you know, that's fun when you're trying to collect them, but it can also be kind of a threat if they are a threatening presence to your colony.
Well, and Viva Pinata had those kind of some of those fun mechanics of, wasn't it, if you had certain types of pinata that other types would show up to kind of like eat those pinata?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'm trying to think about like what... I really like that idea of you're managing these little people. I don't know if it needs to go full Honey, I Shrunk the Kids mode, but yeah, what What changes when you change a planet's landscapes? I feel like bringing a planet back to life almost in some ways too means that you're reactivating things like tectonic, disruptions and that sort of stuff. But maybe even as you imagine, if you went a little Age of Empires on this and like as you terraformed now, okay, now you can hunt animals and that brings in a new type of resource mm-hmm. for the colony. And then as you like get more and more and you can start building, then you can start fishing, right? Once you get to the oceans or able to reach the coast, then suddenly you have access to new technologies. You're moving up the tech tree and then go the full Age of Empires. And why don't we do you can like move up in your civilization's age. And that unlocks like new types of buildings and stuff. And what you're actually doing, right, is you're trying to balance creating a society after you terraform this planet that is not going to re-ruin the planet.
This might be kind of taking it an entirely different direction, but just to kind of throw it out there, one of my favorite Godzilla movies growing up was Godzilla versus Monster Zero, or Invasion of the Astro Monster, I think it was also called in certain translations, but... It was the movie that I think introduced King Ghidorah, which is kind of the three-headed dragon that Godzilla is often faced against. And he comes from a different planet. And you at the beginning of the movie, the humans venture to this planet. They meet the aliens that live there. And, you know, the aliens are just trying to like, you know, it's a pretty inhospitable planet. They're just trying to live. They're just trying to, you know, live their lives, but this giant monster is flying around and zapping everything and just causing a big old mess. And so, you know, they're trying to get a monster from a different planet to come and kill Ghidorah, essentially. But I think it's just interesting having like kind of a kaiju as just kind of an aspect of life that you just have to kind of work around. And maybe your society can advance to the point at which you can destroy it eventually, but to just kind of have to manage with a kaiju being kind of like a permanent part of your ecological system is an interesting idea.
And you said Ghidorah is what I'm reading here. It's a smog monster.
That's,
or is that that's Hedera?
Hedera. That's a different monster. Ghidorah is, yeah. Ghidorah. I'm going to say might be two R's in there, but anyways, known as Monster Zero as well.
Gosh, that hearing Monster Zero is giving me full Evangelion vibes, which I watched through recently. That show's a trip. I do like the idea of there being, like you would have, I know SimCity kind of introduces this, City Skylines has it too now, which is like the natural disasters system. But yeah, maybe as mm-hmm. you terraform a planet, maybe the first thing you do in the game is like pick a planet, right? So you're picking a planet, but you have no idea mm-hmm. that once you like based on the planet that you're picking and the surrounding systems that as you begin to make it hospitable for life, what life is going to come and visit you. Maybe the old yeah. owners of the planet are going to show up and be pretty pissed that you're just taking up residence here, huh? This is where we get all of our crematite or something.
So, yeah, so old aliens coming by to kind of reclaim their space. You got wildlife, both big and small, potentially. Even diseases can kind of pick up over time.
Right.
So if you have a visitor that you don't want, like, what are your tools to fight back? Maybe, like, your society is so invested in terraforming, like that is the branch of technology that they've explored as a race. Like maybe the only weapons they have to fight back are literally like using the weather against these monsters or against the aliens to try to repel the invaders. But then everything that you do is still using the terraforming tools. You might be making the world that's left behind more inhospitable to your own people.
Oh, that's interesting. If you have a mechanic like that, then maybe also as you, right, you're trying to balance the, is there a green way or a planet sustainable way to achieve some of the things that you want to as a society. And maybe you go civilization route and you allow different types of victory conditions. But a game that kind of poses a central question of, can you build up a society of, obviously, of a certain type, and, you know, there will always be bias in these type of game designs, but can you build up a society of people that you defend, that you, I guess, make more mature and kind of grow and move up technologically if you don't destroy the planet while doing it, right? Are you going to, maybe you don't, you can't, you start off just being able to terraform places to have oxygen, and then suddenly you find yourself, as you research more, you can, okay, now we can terraform things to have trees, and then we can terraform things to have like rocks and mountains. And as you unlock those types of terraforming, you're almost shaping and building your world, your map, in the true, like, some games give you a terraforming tool. Yeah. This would actually be a terraforming tool.
Right.
And as you know, okay, well, we can put a mine anywhere, right? With our terraforming tool, are people going to want to live near it? Are we going to be able to, you know, access its resources easily? Is it correctly positioned? All that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I think that's all very interesting. Maybe there's, again, kind of maybe there's different, even the same tools can work differently on different planets. You know, maybe you can use a tool that kind of makes it rain to try to, you know, water the vegetation to try to fill up lakes and stuff like that. But you don't realize that the atmosphere is highly acidic and you end up kind of causing acid rain on everything that you, you know, wanted to water. So yeah, just there's ways of kind of like mixing up the challenge and keeping you on your toes.
That's cool.
I think we're just about out of time. Let's go ahead and wrap that. The real world is experiencing wildfires and a real change in its atmosphere of its own. I think we're coming back towards reality. Let's give it a name.
What if we called it something like hospitable?
That's actually a nice one. It has a very positive spin on what's been to this point a game about being afraid and always trying to avoid disaster. Yeah.
You know what? On that route, it was yesterday. I'm in Denver. It was yesterday, mm-hmm. 99 degrees. At 9 a.m. this morning, it was 32. That is insane. Wow. I am staring at my window. I'm going to send you a picture of this when we're done. 4 inches of snow.
What?
4 inches of snow. Where the hell are we? Please take care of the planet, because we're getting very worried about it. H, on Thursday, we're going to be back up into the 80s again.
Crazy.
Crazy. Ugh. It's very concerning. So maybe that's why I'm pitching that today.
Let's go to the community and see what y'all have for us today. We have a pitch from Neil Piper, a friend of mine, who says, I know how much you guys like pun names, so here we go. I was woken up in the middle of the night, in the middle of the summer pandemic heat wave, and the game title Sayonara Wild Hunt came to mind. What kind of game does this title make you imagine? You come up with a massive open-world adventure game, maybe one where you explore a variety of surreal modern locations with a kick-and-pop music soundtrack and a story involving heartbreak, forgiveness, and the divine arcana of the tarot. Or does this make you picture some sort of rhythm game featuring Geralt of Rivia and company? In this game, you can avoid obstacles and battle monsters as you automatically travel through the world of The Witcher while collecting weapons, gold, potion ingredients, featuring music composed by the composer of The Witcher. It's all written out there, but I don't feel confident.
Many, many letters are involved, we can assure you.
And performed by the Brandenburg State Orchestra. Or does it make you think of something completely different from either of these? These two games and worlds are very different, so I hope it's fun to imagine what they would be mashed together, or a sequel borrowing various aspects from what they each did well. P.S. I hope you are both doing well with everything else going on right now at whatever point in the future this show is recorded. Thank you very much. Let's open up the door on Sayonara Wild Hunt.
Thank you very much, Neil. And kind of sad that in 2020 that you can just write an email of, hey, whenever you get this, I hope you're okay. And it actually feel like it really hits home. Yeah. I am indeed okay. And H, you're okay. Yeah.
Yep. I'm doing good on my side. So these two games, there's, I think, one aspect that kind of stands, I'm searching my brain for like connections, like even surface level connections that can kind of ground these two into kind of a shared universe or something like that. And so, you know, like, this is probably bad, but the first thing that came to mind was there is kind of prominent feature of cards in both games. There's the tarot cards that kind of invoke the bosses and the courses of each of the levels in Sayonara Wild Hearts. And then there are the cards you get for sleeping with women in The Witcher.
Cool.
Which, if you haven't played, maybe it's just the first Witcher game. I don't know if they even brought this back once they started like actually animating the sex scenes, but used to get like basically like anytime you met a, you know, a woman in the Witcher world and, you know, Geralt would sweet talk her or whatever, and you would end up sleeping together. You would get like a trading card that was like a naughty picture of her. So that was certainly a thing that stood out about those games.
Whoa. I had no idea that that was a thing. You know, one of the things that I feel like Neil doesn't get to here that is still kind of in between these things, he's talking about that rhythm action Geralt game. Geralt has many loves, we'll say, in The Witcher. Mm-hmm. But what we don't always spend a lot of time with is Geralt, much like Sayonara Wild Hearts, getting over his loves. He's a man who loves many, or a creature that loves many, depending on one's definition of man. So the I do like the idea, a game that focuses entirely on the breakup vibes of Geralt, especially with the sort of Yennefer and Triss situation.
That's interesting. You know, you always picture Geralt as being kind of like a James Bond figure.
Yeah.
Where he doesn't really care that much about the people that he sleeps with or whatever. You know, you don't never really see him like distraught about those people. But, you know, you can tell that he does kind of have like a soft spot for at least like a couple of the people that are more kind of long-term companions in his life. They always end up circling back. So maybe he's kind of always assured that nobody's ever truly gone from his life. But, yeah, that could be an interesting angle. Another thing is he hangs out with Dandelion, who's either like a musician or an actor or something, kind of like a bard maybe.
Yeah.
And, you know, like Sayonara Wild Hearts being kind of a musical game could be like a good way to ground this as well. Like it could be him kind of recounting Geralt's adventures in a very kind of slapdash, over the top, big fish kind of way.
And I do like the idea of maybe, you know, some aspects or some levels of this feeling like, I think at one point in Witcher 3, Geralt is forced to take part in like a play, right? And read lines on behalf of Dandelion. So I like the idea of maybe as part of the rhythm action game, you are Geralt reenacting a very emotional, very special time in his life where he's navigating through a past relationship. I just think that's fun.
The prevailing feeling that I got after playing Sayonara Wild Hearts was just kind of like a resonance of how Sega that game felt for being a game that has no overlap with Sega. It felt very Nights into Dreams. It felt a bit Bayonetta. There were sections that reminded me of Outrun or Crazy Taxi. Like, just all of my reference points when coming back to that game were Sega games. And so maybe just kind of on a broader level, what would The Witcher look like if Sega produced it? I mean, maybe that's just Shenmue.
Yeah, you might be right there. I think like you could also say, what if you had kind of a Mizuguchi vibe to this thing, and you had, levels that were like plays from The Witcher, and you had levels that were horseback chases. And the same way that the Cyanire Wild Hearts has this sort of like kind of cars whipping through streets very quickly type of stuff. And then you fuse in there a little bit, you know, rounds of Gwent. And as you're slapping down cards and stuff, things are pulsing with the music. And like it starts everything kind of starts off as that minimal dandelion plucking away at strings. And then as each scene of this go through that reenact all the hard things, I think if you haven't been in a relationship, had a breakup and not had a great breakup song to listen to, I feel really bad for you. So I think this is going to be just a banger soundtrack of medieval, is it Denmark or Sweden? Or I forget where the witch...
Poland, in this case.
Yeah. Poland, like synth pop tracks that are describing the loves and losses of Geralt of Rivia. I'm here for that.
Yeah, it would be... You know what would be kind of fun is if, kind of inspired by the Hyrule Warriors sequel that was announced today as of the time of recording, where, you know, the graphical style is meant to mirror Breath of the Wild, to kind of feel like it's kind of straight out of that universe. You're kind of diving into these Musou-type battles, but you are still, you know, essentially it wants you to feel like you are still within Breath of the Wild, which is very cool. Mm-hmm. Like, it would be fun if you were just kind of going on like a Witcher 3 adventure, you know, maybe at several points throughout the game, the whole game kind of slowly starts to devolve, like on certain quest lines, it slowly starts to devolve into like a rhythm game section that is more kind of trippy, LSD dreamlike. You know, you get little feelings that like something weird is going to happen, kind of like a Far Cry drug sequence.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, while you are riding your horse or whatever, the reality starts to fold away and it ends up kind of becoming this trippy dreamscape and you have to play a very different type of game, but like to kind of stitch those levels into an otherwise kind of by the numbers, I don't want to say because they're all very high quality, but you know, kind of not unexpected, a standard Witcher tale.
And if you're the directors of Kingdom Hearts 3, you have to lock away very important lore in this game. just absolutely critical to understand the next game of the series. Oh, you didn't play Sayonara Wild Hunt? That's the one that really explains what Geralt went through and over the next 3 years. I think that's fun. And then like what it does is, you know, Sayonara Wild Hearts is such a specific color palette and aesthetic and that sort of stuff. But to see it almost taken up in fidelity level and then bring in some of that great Witcher, that modern Witcher 3 sort of orchestration and big soundtrack and let it swell and grow into those moments, I think you could actually create something that is both like, do you remember First Night or A Knight's Tale, rather, with Heath Ledger?
Yes. Yes, that's right.
It's kind of this 90s movie example of, they were like, okay, we're going to have people dancing this medieval dance, but they're going to slowly start dancing more and more modern, and we're going to put a David Bowie track in the background. You could potentially do some things like that where you're hearing like he walks into a tavern and there's this kind of very traditional music playing. But as like the scene progresses, like you said, it kind of becomes more and more this like, oh, there's some drums creeping in here or whatever. And all of a sudden my like conversational answers are timed and I'm counting out a rhythm. And then a bar fight breaks out and all the choreography of the bar fight becomes this pure rhythm game as you get this really super modern soundtrack layered over it.
That's pretty cool. And we are over time. Let's close it down. And I guess we already have a name. That job's already done for us. Thank you very much, Neil Piper, for Sayonara Wild Hunt.
Will you be able to real-time redact a game for me?
I do have a redacted game, but before we do that, if you have a game that you would like to send or a game idea that you would like us to workshop on the show, then please do send that in. We are accepting submissions at all times. You can do that by going to playwrightcast.com/pitch. You can email us playwrightcast@gmail.com or you can tweet us at PlaywrightCast.
I'm actually not taking submissions right now. Okay, we're taking them again. So you did. Right, luckily, you're past again. The window. Special thank you to Protodome for the use of our theme song, Hello World. It's been with us now for, what, almost 200 episodes. It feels like we love Protodome. We also love the other great shows on the Kane and Rinse Network. Now, you already know about them. I say them every time. Now it's time for you to go put your money where your mouth is and throw in a buck, $2, whatever, to the Patreon. Help out the shows because it allows, H here and the rest of the gang to continue to make these things, turn them around. And sometimes poor Ryan here was making this show on to the tune of a day, I think, last week. And then, so it is quite the production. It is content that is so dedicated to coming at you. And it's just a great way of saying, and it doesn't have to be forever. Maybe it's a couple months. You go, hey, here's $2 a month for 3 months. That's what I can swing. And, you make it all work, but only what you can afford and do it responsibly.
All right. Let's finish this out with a redacted game. I have one for you today. It is as follows. This is your chance to experience the other side of a redacted. Take on the role of redacted and terrorize the people of redacted to harvest their redacted in the most brazen redacted adventure you've ever played. Take over all of redacted using a variety of redacted on land or in the air.
Gosh, I felt like I was headed somewhere and then hearing in the air messed with me quite a bit. So it's a game. I'm potentially taking on a reverse role or a role that I might not traditionally be cast in. I seem to have some mobility. I can be on the land and air because I am this thing. Is this destroy all humans?
It is. Good first
what?
Guess.
Are you kidding me?
No, good job.
Oh, no. Okay. All right. Hey, recently remastered.
Yeah.
Okay. That helped me huge. what's... Hey, that's my first time guessing it first time out, yeah?
Maybe. That was a good one. So the actual summary was, this is your chance to experience the other side of an alien invasion. Take on the role of alien Cryptosporidium 137 and terrorize the people of Earth to harvest their DNA in the most brazen action adventure you've ever played. Take over all of humanity using a variety of alien weaponry or on land or in the air.
I think for whatever reason, the in the air made me go to destroy all humans because I remember those levels of you could be in Crypto's ship, right?
Yeah.
And actually do like the abductions.
I was thinking that would almost be kind of like a throw you off type of thing. Cause like that kind of sends me to thinking about like Command and Conquer or something like that, where you're commanding both kind of land and air vehicles.
I was also, before the taking over land and air thing, I was very much in the space of this sounds like a horror game, or this is like, I don't know, it could have been one of those weird Resident Evil things, but something where you are almost, what was that multiplayer game? Evolve? Do you remember that thing?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a poor Evolve. It was a good idea, I think, still. But it was like, okay, now I'm this creature and I'm wreaking havoc. But yeah, I don't know. It just called out to me.
Very cool. Well, good job. And that'll make the edit slightly easier as well. So we're all winners here.
Fair enough. Hey, thank you very much.
All right. Have a good one, everyone. We'll catch you again here next week.
Bye.